The Bunny Jew, Aspavali am Kerfacher, you the Sechler Shaw, Shachle. She Fiona McCardle Mish. I'm Fiona McCardle, and you're very welcome to this edition of Shachle. On Shachle and Keat Shaw. In Shachle this time, we meet up with a recent visitor to the island from the Netherlands, Vicky Baines, and she particularly recalls an earlier tour throughout the island in the company of Mona Douglas and Nicolai Giovanelli. And 2019 is the year of Indigenous languages. Francis Bootle Publishers is a publishing house in London, and Clive Bootle is very active in finding and making accessible minority languages throughout Europe. Ta Vicky Baines vol sin chir injil, red tan chinga eco, ta berleren gemnes Dutch, emneset Netherlands. As na kieten Vlaams, nis, elje onsen reim Flanders jen velg. She chinga hermen achi, ta golel lord liorish mush kier milunas feed de lai, mar chinga na mera, as liorish queg milunelle, mar an na chinga ok. Se velgin, she nain jane a tri chingachen eco. Onsen reim jay Friesland, ons tui an chirinjil, ta Friesland ish hier an na chinga ikol. Fodhe de vel kunyachtan yu, de jach fil gond as tachat on shen, an e fear fodhe e de henne, red va ke ega de hit quail, lioridan Friesland ish hier. As hugi le sharash quailtas an mutter kyaun, hai ar imskele ons mora jaduni. It's perhaps not surprising that Vicky Baines should have striking memories of her first visit to the Isle of Man, because she met two people at the time whose personalities would certainly have stuck in the mind. They were Nicolai Giovanelli and Mona Douglas. They died in 1981 and 1987 respectively, so that gives you some indication of the gap there's been between Vicky Baines' first visit to the island when they were active and her recent second visit. Here she is to tell us about her memorable first visit and how that compares with her impressions this second time.
My first visit to the Isle of Man was 43 years ago, 1974, I think, so even more than 43 years ago. And I worked for the Dutch television and Dutch radio at that time. And I'm very interested in all sorts of cultures. And so I decided to go to the Isle of Man. But of course, it was a big adventure because I knew nobody there.
Mm. Well, how did that come about? How did you find out about the Isle of Man?
The only thing we knew in the Netherlands was the TT, the Manx cat without tail, and the Celtic language. So I thought there must be something more for me to see. So I went over, and they call it a cross here. I went across, and I met Baron Giovanelli in Douglas, a very interesting character. And he was very proud that he was the only foreigner who had a Manx passport at that time. He came on the island as a prisoner. He was in a camp. And there he met the family of Mona Douglas. And after he was released, he decided to stay on the island. And then he had this bookshop, and he lived with Mona Douglas. I think they had a sort of platonic relationship, and they were very involved in each other's intellectual lives. And they also ran a farm together, but that wasn't really much of a success. They wrote a book about it, Exile on an Island. I've got the book at home. And in that book, you really start to learn more about his character and his the way he looked at things. You know, he was an Italian, like his name already. You can find out from his name already. And he wrote several books and poetry and they were a very intellectual couple. And I I thought Monad was a very interesting person because she was very passionate about the Manx language. And I was very interested in learning why she was so passionate about it. Monad took me to several schools as well, and she was teaching the language or the dances there. And so I could see the dances. They took me to all sorts of places that had to do with the Manx culture. So I, but at that time, you know, it was completely different than now, because nowadays you have the excellent co-explorer tickets. I was much impressed by the local transport and the way people can go about, and even that citizens, senior citizens, can travel free. And that's not what they can do in the Netherlands, you know. They can do that in England as well, I know, but and on the Isle of Man, but that's a very good thing. Because I was participating in the local transport, you know, I used the buses and so on, and the railways, the steam railway and electric railway, I met quite a lot of people. And people are so open and so helpful, and everything goes in a very smooth way. So that's what also impressed me on this island. You know, it's not the hectic life you're used to on the continent. It has its smooth way of living. Mm. And I had some very interesting talks with people on the way. Mm. I also met a sailor who sailed his boat from England to the Isle of Man. A lot of people do that, I hear later on. Mm. But and then further on, when you're traveling around, you meet all sorts of people. Yes,
it's a very good way to meet people, and using the public transport.
It is really, yes, that's the best way. And I've taken all the transport there is on the island, so the steam railway and also the Snæfell. I went on the Snæfell top, and the electric railway, and they've got some beautiful views from the electric railway on the seaside and the coastal part. Mm. Marvelous. And you can go everywhere on the island now. So nowadays I see more than I used to see when I was over in 1974. Mm. So even when they took me there, yeah.
And comparing that visit, apart from the transport, have you noticed any other radical differences between the island then and the island now?
Yes, I noticed that, of course, things have changed for the good, but also things have changed for the worse, you know, because I noticed cottages have gone and real buildings have arisen and that sort of thing. But I still love the island and the atmosphere of the island, so I think it's really a very nice place to be. Mm. Even after so many years, it has still got the same atmosphere. And of course, the churches. I went to the Anglican church. There are quite some churches on the island, I found out. Mm. And you know what I like very much is the Douglas Head.
Oh, yes.
The view from the Douglas Head is marvelous. You can oversee the whole town. And, well, you can see the boat come in, the steam packets. Mm. And the horse tram, of course. Don't forget about that, but because they are now renovating the promenade. It's only part of the promenade is the horse tram at the moment. Mm. But that's I think they should keep these things, and they should just treasure them, because and also not build too much houses, you know, not too much modern houses, because the island should be like as if you're a century ago, as if you're going back in time. That's what people like. People are living in a very hectic world, and they would, when they go on holiday, they would like to come to a place where there's where they can find refuge from their own hectic way of life. That's what, yeah.
And you've had an opportunity to experience some of the culture of the island again.
Yes, this afternoon I went to a Manx school. That's the only Manx school in the world, and on the Isle of Man, of course, but also in the world. And they performed some dances for me, and that those were dances Mona Douglas collected. And also the students sang songs for me, and I just recorded them. So that was a very good thing to go to. I went to the Gaiety Theatre, a lovely theatre, and I'm going to have a tour around the theatre on Saturday. Of course, I went to all the places, Mona, that were connected to Mona's life, that were also connected to Manx culture. Tinbull Day, I'm sorry to say I missed that because my flight was cancelled. So I arrived on the 5th. But I've seen Tinbull Day 43 years ago, so I've been there then. It was very interesting, yes. So all these very significant places I've been to on the island. Of course, there's always something I left out, yes.
Yes. And with being in St. John's, have you seen much of the work of Culture Vanin?
Yes, they showed me around and told me about the work of the Ellen Vanin heritage, and they gave me some books, the tribute to Mona Douglas, and also some books about the language, the Manx language. Yes, so I saw something of the Manx culture. Yes, I visited the museum, the Manx Museum. It's a lovely museum, but I have to say I missed a part of the folklore. I really expected to see a small corner of Mona Douglas in it, because she's done so much for the Manx culture. And I have to say that, but for the rest, it was a lovely museum, you know. You really have a good idea what the Isle of Man is all about. But I missed that small part, yes.
This was something that Vicky Baines expanded on a little in conversation with Phil Gorn. So let's hear something of their conversation.
I noticed when I went to the Manx Museum, there wasn't much really, there was no corner of Manx folklore. And Mona was only mentioned in the library, and not in the actual museum itself, you see. And that's what I think is a pity, because she deserves far more than that. And maybe, hopefully, in future, that will be different when next time when I come over to the Isle of Man. You know, the history of Mona and how important she was for everybody on the island and for the Manx culture can only be shown when she is really actual in the Manx Museum on display. And then people from abroad start to know her, because she's also had a lot of influence on the people from abroad, you know. She wasn't stuck in the island. She was all over the world. And I made a sort of documentary of Mona and what she was doing, and that's how I started to know her. And I hope I've been of any help to get Mona Douglas more known to the world.
And that's part of a recording made by Phil Gorn talking to Vicky Baines. And both Phil and I were talking to Vicky Baines as she attended events of Uncruniach, the Interceltic Festival founded in its modern form by Mona Douglas. We go back now to my conversation with Vicky Baines. Is she known of outside the island?
Yes, by me, by my article in the Netherlands, because I wrote an article on her. And people are very interested by this article. They are thinking of coming over to see this special island because it has so many characteristic features, you know. And also her contribution to the Manx language and the Manx culture has played a big part in that, yes. And the character of Mona Douglas, I think she was living in her own world and also part of the whole big world. She was very much part of the whole world, but within her own world. And that's what I thought was very very interesting.
There were some people who thought Mona was an extraordinary person, not necessarily in a good way, because of her belief in the other world, perhaps.
Yeah, but her belief in fairies and all that sort of thing, that made her make these stories. You know, that's why that was her world. And that's why she could write this poetry, and she could write all these essays and so on. Otherwise, she couldn't have written them. I'm sure about that.
So this is a return visit after 43 years. Was there a particular reason for not returning within that time?
Yeah, I'll tell you, because I had such a pleasant visit 43 years ago. And it was as if I had been living in a dream. And when I came back, I didn't want to spoil my memory, and I didn't want to come back and find out that everything had been modernized. That was my greatest fear, to come back to the island. But I found out it was still a lovely island, but it has to be careful not to ruin it, you see.
Go to my morning.
What did you say?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll say it in Dutch now. Dank u wel.
Broadcast journalist Vicky Baines from the Netherlands and her memories of Nicolai Giovanelli and Mona Douglas, as well as her thoughts on the island then and now and for the future. Ons feed kiddas jai, hailiora clow, bakurlesh kujach gilum sechilk, harish keen de vlinton, vi emnesit clog of ananen. Tashan lau scrunums on shan yernish onji, and chenya roche mananish. As savang len elegin at chench and kelchach, tashan lau scrunen regeven ons bretnish. Egafelia et the kelchach ons lorion, ons feed kiddas quag jeg. Ba Ellen Vannen as an horn kyle kujach, mona hajunan honorit, sivlein shen. As ta tree lawn, the yichen oru, mona sheshachan se, uns nan mang len. An shibi, tretashin kosola ad rachelia, ta laus krunin uns cornish, makion bairn ne nuen, as klein foliacht, as hanel tradishun holyaur sigilk skruit ein. Gerdevel cloga vannenin, gors jach skrunin granit e chroshen, as ta shen gol a rash to St. Jayu Keed Blaine. Clive Bootle is a managing director of Francis Bootle Publishers of London, and for some years Clive Bootle has been taking a practical interest in the lesser used languages of Europe. As 2019 is the year of Indigenous Languages, or Lesser Used Languages, and he's been responsible for publishing an anthology of pieces in Manx, he took the opportunity to visit the island to talk about that and his various other projects.
published a book, an anthology of Manx, but that's not the only minority language that you've been involved in. What got you into that side of publishing?
In the late part of the last century, I came across a manuscript of poetry in a language which I didn't know existed but intrigued me, and that was Cornish. When I went on to publish a collection of poetry in Cornish by Tim Saunders. And I was intrigued by it, not least because it was written in a language which I didn't really know much about, but it had a very modern sensibility, and that attracted me. And then after that, I went on to publish books in Breton, then Manx, and Welsh, Galician, and other minoritized European languages. I keep it to Europe because you've only got one lifetime, and I'm just concentrating on one particular area which I'm familiar with.
What sort of quantities of books are we talking about in minority languages?
Well, I suppose that between 500 and 1,000 for a substantial anthology. I think what you've got to what we've got to understand really is that since I started publishing in minority languages, it was a fairly bleak landscape, and the interest really wasn't there in the English-speaking world. But over the last 10 years, over the last 20 years, there's been a considerable interest in literature in translation, and there's also, you know, a small but resolute group of people who are interested in endangered and minority languages, and there are festivals now and institutions dedicated to it and courses, and that makes my job a lot easier. But that wasn't the case when I started. I felt very much like a pioneer.
The publications that you have cover language, but in a variety of different ways as well. Poetry, and there's a Cornish book about dancing.
Yes, that's true. I mean, obviously, the language, once you become involved with the language or with a culture, often as a publisher, you get offered sort of ancillary or other kinds of book, and that all feeds into the the general discourse about a culture. I do poetry. Poetry is very important to me. I'm a great lover of poetry, and I do think that it's a kind of very important vehicle for language stabilization, revitalization. So I'm very interested in that. But other cultural things as well, like dance, song, even history and architecture. It all builds up a picture of a culture.
I mentioned the book on Cornish dancing, but Cornwall is an area with which you've established quite firm links now.
Yes, that's true. I've got a badge on my jacket which says Cornish by accident, and that's pretty much what it is. Yes, I mean I have developed links over the last 20 years, first with the language and then with other forms of cultural production. And I'm a regular visitor to Cornwall.
And you're a member of the Cornish Gorsedd as well?
Yes, I am. Yes, I was a couple of years ago. They very kindly recognised my contribution to the status of, in particular, the language. Yeah.
The most recent project you mentioned is an incredibly minority language.
Yes, I was. I do quite a lot of networking particularly at the London Book Fair. And I was I got into conversation with people from the Baltic, and I was introduced to a language called Livonian, which is a coastal area of Latvia, there are 30 people speak that. In fact, there might not be 30 people. Between 20 and 30 people speak it, but strangely enough, because of its minoritized state, because of its, I suppose, to be frank, its novelty, it has actually had quite a lot of publicity in the UK, because it's going to be on the BBC at Radio 3 in August as a poetry program. And yes, and the Latvian government have been very generous in sending the author of this book of poetry, Valts Ernstreits, over to Britain a couple of times. So, I mean, all those things need to be, tight, knitted together. You know, the kind of the subventions, the availability of the author, and an interest in the press. Don't get me started on the British press.
What's the next project on the stocks?
Well, I'm really very, very advanced with a book in Scottish Gaelic, an anthology. It's 800 pages, and it covers from 600 to the present year, 600 AD to the present day. It's a very substantial anthology. And obviously, there's a lot of literature there. I'm very excited by that because it's been supported by the Gaelic Books Council, and we're going to be taking it around practically everywhere in Scotland.
Clive Bootle of Francis Bootle Publishers of London. Manannan's Cloak, or Manannan's Cloak, an anthology of Manx literature, brings together a range of texts and gives translations of them, and they're all linked by a narrative to place them in the context of Manx history. Ochnish, Shenev or Shachle and Hudshaw. We've come to the end of another edition of Shachle, but it'll be back next time. So from me, Eish Foam, Fiona McArdle, Slen Yu.